You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Home and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is the very Janeway hair-looking Charlene Schmidt.
Yes, hello, hello. I am rocking some red.
And you're drinking coffee. You are just channeling Kate Mulgrew right now.
I am. I am one with the Mulgrew.
Name of the podcast.
Like it.
All right. Well, today what we're talking about is one of, I'd say, our favorite topics to talk about. And sadly, this is going to be our last of said topics, not of the show. And that is our top five episodes that we would watch on a lazy Sunday afternoon. And this edition is from season 7.
I don't want to talk about this.
It's all right. It's all right. We're going to get
through
it.
It's the last one.
We'll share some tears. We'll share some laughs.
I'm shedding them right now, man. Painful. Just it's the end of this series, and I feel like it took us 93 episodes to get here, but wow, it really, I don't know. That said, this is definitely not going to be our last marathon episode ever. I mean, there's a million ways you can construct a marathon, and so it will continue. It's just this segment, this series that we've done, is coming to a close.
As I was taking a look through season 7, and obviously we're big fans of Voyager, but I'm looking through season 7 and I'm like, there isn't a plethora of gems as there are in previous seasons. And I feel like for a lot of shows, that's kind of the case where they either start off strong and then peter out, or they take a while to find their footing and then they get really good and then kind of peter off towards the end. And if you're really lucky, you'll just be, you know, like you'll take a while to start off and then just plateau and keep going. But with Voyager, I felt like it was pretty spotty. Like, there was no horrible seasons, and there were a few seasons where we're just like, wow, this is amazing. But there was definitely some seasons that were kind of half and half.
Yeah, I think of Voyager season 7 sort of like as TNG season 7, where they knew the end was coming, and like, instead of really dialing it up, they kind of just petered out and then tried to ramp up to the end. And TNG was much more successful with their finale, I feel, with All Good Things, as opposed to Endgame. With Voyager, I just feel like they were out of gas for so long. I mean, how many hundreds of hours of Star Trek had a lot of these writers written at this time? They were out of ideas. You could kind of tell they were phoning it in. And it's just, let's get this done. Let's get it over with. Plus, Enterprise was on the horizon, and Paramount, or, well, UPN was pushing them to get it out. Whereas they wanted to take a break between Voyager and Enterprise so they could develop it and do it right. And Paramount said, no, we want it now. We have got to keep Trek on the air. And so there was that pressure just to kind of keep things going as they were. But ultimately, I feel like Voyager and Enterprise both kind of suffered as a result. And season 7, yeah, there's definitely, there are some high points, there's some good episodes, but there's also some that I absolutely never have to ever see again, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a few in there when, like, as I'm scrolling through, I'm like, I don't know, like this one's not horrible, but I wouldn't really want to put it in my marathon. And
right.
It's funny that you compared it, like, as you were talking about, like, TNG, like, kind of ramping up towards the end. I'm wondering around the psychology and logistics around that, because for Voyager, they knew that was the end. Okay, this is it.
Definitely,
yeah. We got to ramp up, we got to go towards the light, and there's another show on the horizon. Now, with TNG, they were on top. They were doing fantastic ratings-wise and money-wise, and they went out on top knowing that they were going to do a movie. Like, they decided to end by saying, well, we could do another season. We could easily do season 8, but it would be more cost effective to do movies.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like once that decision was made, then, okay, season 7, let's go out while we're on top. TNG did definitely end stronger.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But they were kind of going down just a little bit because those middle seasons were so incredibly good.
Yeah.
I mean, they were beating out Monday Night Football in the ratings back when ratings had a little more significance.
Yeah.
So that was a big deal. And then, of course, with the movie, ooh, they're going on to bigger and better things. And then they were on the movie set the next week. So, you know, it wasn't entirely goodbye. Plus, they set the precedent for 7 years with TNG.
Yes, yes, they did. So we got 7 years with TNG, 7 with DS9, 7 for Voyager, and Enterprise didn't quite make it.
Yeah, very unfortunate. But we knew by then, okay, Voyager's getting 7 years. We're in the 7th season now. I really feel like they should have stepped it up and made the most of it, whereas the result, kind of, no, they fell short. Mm-mm.
You know, hindsight's always 20/20, and, you know, I'm like, no one on a show, like, sets out to do a mediocre job, but sometimes things just don't come together, or the episode doesn't work the way that you think it would, and you know, and this was just kind of a victim of that. But I feel like season 7 of TNG and season 7 of Voyager are very similar in the realms of quality, where there's some really great ones and then not so really great ones.
Yeah.
And you can't really talk about DS9 season 7 because that was just on a whole different level. That was just...
It totally was. Like, when you want to talk about ramping up, think about that arc that leads up to the very end. That was unprecedented. Other shows on TV were not doing that at the time. It was... And of course, it was amazing. They really knew what they were doing with that. So, totally different plane there. Totally.
Totally different plane there. But, so as we move on, as we discussed our hard time picking the top five episodes for a marathon of season 7, I'm itching to find out what your first episode is. And now, this is in order that you would watch them. Doesn't necessarily have to be in temporal order.
Yeah, and it definitely is not. Okay, so to kick this off, I'm going to start with one of my favorites, and I took the risk of this also being on your list because it's a B'Elanna story, and that is Lineage.
That is not on my list, but that was a hard one not to put on my list because I was like, is a B'Elanna episode. This has to go on.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked. Like, I actually put this one in. This was the very last selection I made, to tell you the truth, because I thought, no, Tristan's going to put this on his list. We're going to double up. And so I have honorable mentions, and I can't believe this isn't on your marathon. What?
Okay,
are you ill?
Well, I am exhausted, but I'm definitely not ill. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Okay, well, blame it on that. Well, let's talk a little bit about Lineage, because I feel like this is a very important season 7 episode, because, of course, this is the one where we find out where B'Elanna is pregnant. And that's a very important part about season 7 is the pregnancy. And then, of course, she delivers in Endgame. And it's very important to Tom and B'Elanna. And also, I like the message in this episode. It's kind of what keeps me coming back to watch this one over and over. And I feel like it has even more significance now than it did back when it aired in 2001. You know, back then, like, cloning and genetic manipulation wasn't quite as much of a science as it is now. We had Dolly the sheep. That was just about it.
That's about it, yeah.
Whereas now, we are messing with the genetic components of our food, and we're cloning even more animals, and then there's always the possibility of humans on the horizon, and how far is too far? Like, what do you manipulate and what don't you? And so I think that's very relevant, and this episode explores that, and so I really like this episode.
This episode always makes me think of Gattaca, the movie Gattaca, with Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman.
I've not seen it.
Oh, you absolutely have to. Like, this was hailed as one of the most scientifically accurate sci-fi movies that's ever been made.
Oh, okay.
It's about a society that has embraced genetic engineering, or I should say not necessarily genetic engineering, but I guess you could call it that, but it's genetic manipulation. It's exactly where, like, you see two parents go into the clinic and they're like, okay, well, we want a baby with blue eyes and fair hair, and we want, you know, like, we want light skin, we want him to be athletic, but also, you know, like, intelligent, you know, like, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so they basically get to order their baby. And
custom babies.
But the thing is that, like, their first child they had without genetic manipulation. And their second child, they did. And so it's about this struggle of equality between the non-genetically engineered and the genetically engineered. And we flash forward to when he's a grown-up and he's a janitor. And that's all that he'll be able to do because he's not genetically engineered. And they said that we've gotten discrimination down to a science. And
wow.
It's a fantastic film. You need to watch it. But this is... But the reason why I like this episode, or like Lineage, because they take that same struggle on, where it's like, how, you're changing the identity of this baby before it's even born.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. This does sound like an amazing movie. I have to see this. I have to make sure it's on Netflix. I can't believe that I've not seen it. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, kind of the same message there, like, how far is too far, and what is ethical and what isn't in terms of custom designing a child, and what is the result of that? I can just see our world too heading in that direction as well, where people are saying, look, no, we want our kid to be a superstar, make it a genius.
Yeah. And what do you do when the entire world is filled with excellence and you're supposed to be expected to be excellent, but yet you might fall short? So, yeah, it's...
Right. You have all these exceptional people, but you still need people to take out the trash. So...
Yeah. And who do you make take out the trash? Yeah.
Exactly. So many questions there. All right. Well, let's move on. And I want to know what your first pick is. How would you start your season 7 marathon?
Well, I started this very purposefully, and that's with the episode Shattered.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. Good pick. It is on my list as well, but it's not first.
Well, the Obviously. Reason why I put it first is because I feel like this is a nice retrospective. And mm-hmm. I think we talked about this episode, or we did a commentary. I can't remember. And
commentary.
We named the episode Shades of Grey Done Right, or Not Shades of Grey, or something like that.
Yeah. I think we actually teetered between both of those titles and went with one of them.
And I like this one because it takes you back. It shows you where they began. It shows you some of their adventures in between. It shows you a little glimpse of what the future could be like. And mm-hmm. when you're watching a marathon of just season 7 episodes, you're aware that this is the end. And so I think it's a nice way to kind of look back and think about how far you've come. And it's a great episode. And it's Chakotay focused. And
Is it really?
Well, he's the protagonist. He's the one traveling through time and traveling through all of the other dimensions and all that kind of business.
Yeah, that's true. But I actually read an interview way back when where Robert Beltran described this as, it was meant to be a Chakotay episode, but it's really a Janeway and Chakotay episode. And I've got to agree with him.
Well, okay. Yes, I'd have to put that, because once he kidnaps Janeway from the past and shows her the future, it then becomes a Janeway Chakotay episode, but that's okay with me.
He is the hero, but of course is the captain. She kind of takes over. She even gets a speech toward the end and thanks everybody for their help. And so I consider it a Janeway Chakotay story. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Anyway, minutia.
Sorry.
I think starting a 5-episode marathon, it's good to remember where you've been.
Totally. Yeah, I love this episode. We talk about it quite a bit. It's a fun retrospective. It does show you where they've gone and where they could be going. And for a season 7, this is kind of the nice little not clip show to remind us of, just kind of make a little capsule.
Yeah.
A Voyager in and of itself. So the Bun of Steel makes a return too, and that's never
that's
a bad
right.
thing.
And the Bun of Steel looks a little weird on season 7 Kate Mulgrew, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not quite the same, is it?
Because no matter how much you take care of yourself as a human, not just as an actor, not just as a woman or a man, but as a human, your body is going to change over the course of 7 years. That's the better part of a decade.
Yeah, how can it not? I mean, like you said, it doesn't matter like how many antioxidants you're taking or what kind of Botox you're doing or anything like that. Your body is going to age, and you can't tell there is a difference. This is definitely not season one Kate Mulgrew, but oh well, you can't help that. It's sort of like how Data ages, and he's not supposed to.
Yeah, it's
but
not fair.
Brent Spiner does, so.
Yeah, it's not fair for Data or Q, you know, like like actors like that, like John DeLancey, Brent Spiner, or when you do time traveling episode, the only character or actor it's fair to is Patrick Stewart. That's the only person.
Yeah. Oh, I love that meme where they compare 20 years of Earl Grey to like, you know, 5 years of cocaine for Lindsay Lohan. Oh, and
Lindsay,
how bad she
Lindsay,
ages
Lindsay.
Compared to Patrick Stewart. Oh, man. Yeah. It's pretty rough.
It's pretty rough. So what number was shattered on your list?
This is how I would end my marathon for the very reasons that you discussed, because you know Endgame is not going to make my list. And so Shattered is the, it's not a finale, but if I'm going to cap off a season 7 marathon, I feel like this does a better job than Endgame. I hate to say, it's just kind of a nice little, it's not quiet, but, it is a toned down version, I suppose, of a finale. It's not meant to be a finale, but you can use it as a finale.
I like that we chose that episode for the same reasons, but just on different bookends.
Totally. That's awesome. Okay. So number two.
Number two for me is Body and Soul.
Ha! Same here.
Seriously? Okay.
Yeah, seriously.
No, see, okay, I knew that this was gonna be rough. I knew that we were gonna have very similar lists because of the reasons that we stated about season 7, about how it's not it's not like 90% great or 80% great. We're looking at 40, 50.
This is no season 4, that's for sure.
This is no season 4. Yeah, Body and Soul is just, you know, I love the fun episodes and the episodes where not everybody's going to die and, you know, there's not some horrible disease. And this is one of those episodes where, yeah, they're captured, but it's not like, it's not like they're POWs or anything like that. They're just kind of like being detained. And you have the doc inside Seven's body. I mean, I wish I was around for that pitch meeting where somebody just said, like, you know what we need to do? The doc in Seven's body. And then you just go, bam! That's right. You struck gold.
Boom.
Keep going. Write it down.
Yeah, end of meeting. Let's just write this thing, right? I actually have this in my notes. I said a season 7 marathon would be incomplete without some sort of Seven and Doctor showcase. So what is better than the Doctor and Seven? The Doctor in Seven.
The Doctor in Seven.
Don't pervert that line, but that is what happens. And I mean, how can this not make a season 7 marathon? Because it is definitely one of the better gems of the whole season.
Yeah, and then you have J.R. Ryan, who tries to channel Robert Picardo. Can you imagine how much fun that would have been on set?
Oh, man, I would have loved to have watched.
You could just see Bob Picardo just like standing behind the camera just going, no, I am not that flamboyant.
Oh, but come on, don't you know this story where J.R. Ryan actually had Bob Picardo recite her lines so that she could watch his inflections and movements and how he would read as the Doctor? And so she kind of like mimicked that.
Oh, yeah. No, I have heard that story, and I wish I could have been on set for that. And it kind of makes me think of in Tron Legacy when they had Jeff Bridges. It's kind of that same story of no matter how well you take care of yourself, you're going to get older. And so Jeff Bridges is supposed to play a version of him that's 25 years younger. So what they did was they recorded his movements and his facial expressions. And he would act out the scene and do the scene, but then his body double would watch him and then try to do the scene the exact same way.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel like this was very similar to that, and I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, I feel like J.R. Ryan absolutely nailed it. When I'm watching those scenes with her, I feel like I am watching the Doctor just with J.R. Ryan in place.
I don't know if I would go that far personally. I feel like she did a fantastic job and as good as she could. But I feel like there's a few times when J.R. Ryan's natural femininity kind of came out a little bit too much towards Bob Picardo.
Really?
Yeah. There was just a few times when he was just, when she did, I feel like she did a cartoon version of the talk.
So you think it was a little over the top?
I feel like it was just a little over the top. Like, there were certain times, like the case that's kind of popping into mind is when she's talking to Janeway through the view screen.
Okay, you know what I think it is?
What is
totally it? Cut you off. I'm sorry. I think it's the fact that we are so used to seeing a pretty emotionless, very controlled and reserved and straightforward Seven of Nine, as depicted by Jeri Ryan. The fact that she lets loose and actually gets to have more than one facial expression changes everything for her.
I you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's just too different for me. Like, maybe seeing that Borg, like seeing the lack of Borg drone qualities as opposed to someone who's very emotional and very mm-hmm. sarcastic and very, very into himself. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why I feel a little deterred.
I can kind of see where you're coming from, the fact that she is very animated in that specific scene that you mentioned. I disagree, but I could kind of see why you would get there.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all perspective. And, you know, maybe I need to watch it again. But all right. So let's move on to number three. What's your number three?
My third pick is Prophecy. And again, this is another fun one. This is where we have the Klingons in the Delta Quadrant. And this is, of course, dealing with the pregnancy with B'Elanna and Mir'al, because I think that Mir'al is going to be this group of Klingon savior. And I love the comedy in this episode. I think it's hilarious, especially with Neelix getting it on with the Klingons and having just a total blast. I just enjoy watching this one. It never gets old. I have a good time watching it all the time. And I'm not even the biggest fan of the Klingons as a culture. Like, I kind of get bored with the whole honor thing and their pain rituals and all that. But this is a very cool take of bringing Alpha Quadrant aliens that we know over to the Delta Quadrant, and I feel like it's a very good use of that. And so it makes sense. I like that.
Yeah, no, this episode was hard not to put on the list because it's fun and because we never get to see Klingons in Voyager, at least not real ones.
Yeah, not usually.
It's so I thought it was refreshing to see the Klingons in Voyager, and it was awesome to see Neelix just completely click with that culture and on multiple levels. And it was so fun to see that Harry Kim storyline where Neelix pretends to like beat him up and kick him out of the kitchen just to show dominance over Kim mm-hmm. in order to attract the Klingon female. And also, like, it's fun to, you know, I love any kind of episodes with B'Elanna and dealing with her heritage It was just pretty cool to see all of those elements together. Like, you had some funny moments, you had some very serious moments, you had some maternal and paternal moments, and it was just fun to see Tom kind of step up, even though he would have gotten slaughtered if it wasn't for a disease.
Definitely.
And yeah, I just thought it was an all-around good episode, yeah.
Yeah, it shows just what kind of a guy Tom is. So that's cool, too. There's character development. I mean, you got a little bit of everything in this episode. It's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your number three?
My number three is Inside Man.
Okay, I considered this one. Why did you pick it?
This one, I thought, you know, normally I'm not a big fan of Barclay. I'm not that big of a fan of Reg. And
really?
I thought it was a little weird to have Troy in this episode so much, but while I was kind of rethinking about the episode and reading the notes, I was like, you know what, you need something that's a little bit different in a marathon, and this episode's very different because we spend so much time in the Alpha Quadrant and we don't normally do that. I mean, we've spent like a couple, like a minute or two here or there with other episodes, but then when you have the Pathfinder episode, which was him very much in the Alpha Quadrant. And so with season 7, I felt like this was good to see something that's not shattered, not, you know, body and soul, where it's just, or a bottle episode where it's just a very different format. And I think that's the main reason why I went towards it with season 7, is because it's very much a different format from any other episode. And also you get to see some Alpha Quadrant characters. You see Reg, you see Troy, and you see some Alpha Quadrant, you know, aliens, as in the Ferengi. And it was cool to see the actor who plays Reg play him so differently.
Yeah, totally. Almost kind of like what you were saying with Jeri Ryan playing the Doctor, I feel like he's kind of playing a caricature of himself, almost a Jim Carrey-esque Reg Barkley.
Or at least what he wants to see of himself.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yes.
Yeah, like how ridiculous would we be if we got to choose who we are?
We would have people applaud as we left the room after entertaining them, apparently. At least that's Reg's fantasy.
Yeah. Something like that. And it's I think that's the main reason why I chose, just because it's so different. Not so much because I'm in love with this episode or I think it's that great of an episode. It's just because it's different. And that's the reason why it's in the middle of the marathon, is because it breaks up.
Yeah. OK, I see where this would be effective. And it is different. I think that's kind of why I like just the whole Pathfinder story arc that Voyager has altogether, because it is the Alpha Quadrant. They're making contact with home, and that's just so important to Voyager as a whole. But when it comes to the Pathfinder episodes, I feel like this is one of the weaker ones. Like you said, it's very implausible that like Barkley is catching up with Troy on vacation. Like little things about it don't make much sense, and I'm just really not quite willing to go along with it. It's not Pathfinder.
Yeah, I feel it's like there's kind of like a Pathfinder trilogy where there's Pathfinder, but then there's the one where Doc goes to the Alpha Quadrant to meet up with Doc Zimmerman, and you see Troy and Reg in that one, and then you have this one with Troy and Reg. I think like this is definitely the weaker of the three, or of those episodes.
Yeah, but that said, I still feel like it is kind of a natural progression in the whole idea of making contact between Voyager and the Alpha Quadrant. Like, I really do think that they would try to send a hologram over or something like that. But then you have kind of that Ferengi subplot. I don't know. Ferengi on Voyager is just not something I'm into. So even though it does make sense why it happens the way it happens, I'm just kind of, I don't know. I watched this one last night trying to determine my marathon, and I'm just thinking, yeah, it's okay, but I ultimately put it off the list. So anyway, I'm glad we got to talk about it.
So what's your number four?
Okay, number four, we're going to go a little more serious now, and I chose Critical Care. Because I think this message of an episode is so incredibly strong and relevant. It was important back then, and I feel like it's even more important now just because of the way healthcare is structured, at least in the U.S. Maybe those with universal healthcare would disagree a little bit, or maybe they would agree. I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing for feedback from listeners around the world. But I think it says a lot about our medical system, how much worse it could get because of the way that you could value life and whether or not you deserve treatment for any condition based on your quote-unquote worth to society. I mean, again, it's a big what if that could happen in our actual world.
This is one of those episodes for me where the message is better than the story, in my opinion.
Okay.
I did not connect with this episode. I was quite bored, and this is one that I usually skip in my marathons just because I was just
really?
Like...
Really? Oh. See, this is one I don't miss. Maybe, I don't know. I have, in my life, sought medical treatment both with or without insurance, and the difference where you can get treatment, how you can get treatment, how you're expected to pay for treatment, And flat out, sometimes the way you are treated as a patient, there is a difference. And I don't know, maybe I just relate to that so much that I love this episode for that.
Yeah, I think like it's a very relevant message, and it's a very good message, and I think it was well crafted. But I think it was more in the execution. I thought it was one of those moments where I was like, yes, we get it. You know, like it was one of those, I was like a heavy-handed hammer over the head kind of thing.
Okay. So, like, was it too preachy? Is that what you were saying?
I felt like it was a little too obvious. How do I phrase it? I don't know. It's just, I like it when we have the subtle messages in Star Trek, when you're like, oh, okay, so that relates to me, but I get it because of such and such. Like I like it when you have to think about it, when you have to ponder it. Like, what does it really mean? Why does it say what it's saying? With this one, there's no room for interpretation.
That's true. You make a really good point. And if you don't like that, I could see why you wouldn't like this episode.
But I'm not saying Like, it shouldn't have been made. I'm not saying it wasn't a good message. It was just, I like it when it's a bit more subtle.
Okay. Makes sense. Fair enough. How about you? What's number four?
Well, to continue with the Doctor theme, which was hard to not do in the last couple of seasons, because you have the big three, Janeway, Seven, and the Doc. Yeah. I had to go with Author for number four.
This was my honorable mention. So why did it make your list?
Author is just fan-friggin-tastic.
Yeah, undeniably.
You know, talk about a heavy-handed message.
Like, literally, on your back.
Like, literally, on your back. Like, I want you to feel the weight. You know, like, this like this is the kind of non-subtlety that makes it fun. And so, like, for those of you who don't know, Author is the episode where the Doc creates his own holo program called Photons Be Free. And it's about how the protagonist of the holo novel has to go through the adventures of the starship Vortex. And everything is Voyager, but not quite. And the crew, Tom finds the file and plays it, and then he gets super offended because it's stereotypes of each person. And like Lieutenant Marseille is a womanizer, and you know, Janeway just doesn't give a damn about
anything,
especially holographic life. Like, they keep saying, like, you're not a person, you're a toaster, you're a tricorder, you're a piece of technology. Even though, like, it was, you know, through a comedic lens, it was interesting to see that kind of message where it's like, he still feels this way, even though he has so much freedom.
Mm-hmm.
How, can you really say that to someone who is an individual? Like, we gave you a lot of freedom, and it's like, yeah, but you gave it to me. I don't just have my freedom.
Right. And there is a big difference, right? I mean, there is a distinction. So the fact that the Doctor still feels this way, it may be buried deep down, he still feels this way. And this is kind of a really creative way of acknowledging that.
Yeah. And I love the banter between the Doc and Paris. I think any kind of moments where they can either make fun of each other, but then like hug it out at the end, I really enjoy. Yeah. And this is one of those episodes.
Yeah, and this is another one that, even though it's not in my marathon, I feel like if you're going to do a Voyager Season 7 marathon, chances are this one's not going to get picked over because it's funny, it has a good message. Of course, Bob Picardo puts in an amazing performance. What's not to love here? So it's pretty obvious. If you've seen this episode, you know that this is a good one.
Yeah.
Let's go to your cap off here.
Okay, well, you're not going to like it.
Oh, I know what it is. Fine, explain yourself.
Okay, so how can you do a Season 7 marathon that's a celebration of the last season of Voyager and the entire journey and not end it with Endgame?
Because you put Shattered in its place, that's why.
That's the only acceptable episode to replace it for
that's
a
true.
Marathon. So I'll have to give
truth.
You that. But Endgame, okay, we've talked about this so many times in the course of 2 years of doing this podcast with each other.
Yes, I won't argue with you. Please tell me why you love
it. No, you don't have to argue with me. It's just, it's all personal preference where I don't have a problem with Endgame as much as everybody else. Like, are the flaws there? Absolutely. Do I recognize them and feel them with you? Yeah, but it wasn't as big of a deal for me as it was for you or the rest of the country or the rest of the world. And, but I enjoy the finality of it. I enjoy watching a long marathon, ending a journey, and then seeing Janeway sit in her chair going, we did it. Set course for home, you know? And it's just, I needed that catharsis. I needed that moment where they bust through the caravan of Borg ships and explosions, and they arrive in style to meet the fleet, the Federation fleet. And they get an escort home. And also on top of that, Paris doesn't even care because he hears his baby crying and he goes and Chakotay is at the helm. And you have Janeway sitting down saying, set course for home, and Chakotay is at the helm.
Mr. Chakotay, no less. Like,
yeah,
what?
Mr. Chakotay.
Since when is he Mr. Chakotay? Like, obviously Janeway is very bitter about the relationship with Seven or something just because that's so formal. Since when is it Mr. Chakotay? It's always Chakotay. Or if it's an early season, Chakotay.
Chakotay.
Okay, I'll give you that. That is a very epic moment. And if there is like one thing I really enjoy about Endgame, it's when Voyager busts out of the exploding Borg sphere and all of a sudden it's in the Alpha Quadrant and there's all those ships that are ready to welcome it.
I needed that catharsis. I needed that end to the show in order to finish what I would call my favorite marathon.
Okay, fair enough. Season 7 isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Also, I never know whether it's pronounced Babel or Babel, so I always feel scared to talk about it.
That you don't want to bring it up in polite conversation.
Yeah, Journey to the Moon, you know.
You know, Journey to Journey.
Yeah.
Journey to the center
to,
of the Earth.
To the journey, yes.
Earl Grey.
Patrick Stewart said, look, we can have that scene where Worf explains why he's in the movie, or we can have my Mambo scene, but we can't have both.
The orb.
He just completely sells it, and he is Benjamin Sisko by this point. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Well, he better be Benjamin Sisko by this point, yeah. Matthew. There's only one episode left in the series.
This is true. This is true.
To the journey!
And this is, I would dare even say, when he starts falling in love with Captain Janeway. This is the road that leads to the bathtub. From this point forward, he is just ever so slowly falling for her. And the monkey.
Warp 5.
They were just like, okay, we know this is the end, so screw it. We're just going to do whatever the hell we want. And putting Shatner in there, it's just like, why not? Who cares?
The Ready Room.
Also, one other thing it reminded me of, when they're in space, the escape pod that Trip and Kaitama use, did that not look to you guys like the ship from Pigs in Space without the engines?
Yes. Oh my gosh, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
There are two notes that I seriously made. There were two notes that I made.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, I love Riker's TV. I question what he's watching.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Wise, if he's on the bridge of the Voyager, he's not even back at Harry Kim's station, right? He's one of the extras in the background who has to stand because he doesn't even have a chair.
Literary Treks.
You're waiting for one of the core cast of Vanguard to show up in these books, you're going to be waiting a long time. As long as the three of us have anything to say about it, it ain't going to happen.
Continuing Mission.
The big thing here is I did it all for the cost of 3DS Max, which I bought with an educational discount. So like $300.
Yeah. I don't think you can get an educational discount on materials to build an actual set, can you?
Axanar, the official podcast.
When I learned the concept behind Prelude to Axanar that was going to be a History Channel-style documentary, I got so excited. Like, my favorite Star Trek book ever is David Goodman's Federation, The First 150 Years, because I just love... it's a history book.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are all over the place. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. We've got the master feed if you love your Trek FM and can't get enough, because new stuff gets in there every single day. And of course, we've got a sponsor to help us pay for the cost of hosting and production and bandwidth for all of our shows. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, before we go, we've got a little feedback to cover, because TTJ91 definitely got us some feedback from fellow listeners. And for those who don't remember, that is the episode where we talked about which TNG or DS9 character we would have wanted to have brought on Voyager to become a permanent cast member. Now, I feel like maybe we did overlook one thing, because several people did mention it, and that is Tom Riker.
Yes. Oh, so many people have come digitally come up to me and said, why didn't you talk about Tom Riker? Why wouldn't it be Tom Riker? I love Riker, William Riker. William Riker is my favorite character, hands down, out of any Star Trek iteration, the entire franchise. He's my absolute favorite character.
The whole thing, huh?
I liked the Tom Riker episode that he was in TNG, and I love that he was in Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. Now, Deep Space Nine is where he should have come back, not Voyager.
It's true, just because of the way the whole Maquis angle went. But then here's the thing. Okay, if they would have brought Tom Riker on, the Maquis angle on Voyager might have also been very different. And, of course, this is all in hindsight, though. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we're saying this 20-something years later. But the way that they did portray Tom Riker on DS9 does make me agree that he should have stayed on DS9 if there ever was to be a return. But unfortunately, there was not, because in real life, of course, Jonathan Frakes, he's getting his directing career started. And so when an actor wants to become a director, they start focusing on that and don't necessarily take acting jobs. So this wouldn't have happened. And that's actually why I didn't mention it at all, because I figured, no, it wouldn't have happened. Jonathan Frakes would have said no.
So like, okay, so like even like outside of the universe, you have a good reason. And inside, Tom Riker, oh, actually, this isn't even really inside. This is more outside. Jonathan Frakes is too big. He is too big of a force to be on Voyager. He's just... He's a monument to Star Trek, and he's just, his personality is huge. He's literally a large man. He's very tall, but that's besides the point. It's just, I feel like his personality is too big. He wouldn't fit in Voyager because he would have overshadowed too much. And that's why we came up with Jadzia and Jake and maybe even a little bit of Beverly, because like even though Beverly is on the same level as Riker in the terms of how long she's been a part of Star Trek history, her personality is nowhere near as large as Will's.
It's true, even though Matt Rushing would probably disagree with you, but he's got his reasons.
He's got his reasons, yeah.
That have nothing to do with anything. But you're right. Like, okay, I know a lot of people call Voyager TNG light. Well, could you imagine if Jonathan Frakes were on Voyager every single week? I mean, people would have, I think, even criticized Voyager even more, saying, oh, the show couldn't stand on its own without Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't have worked.
We needed to pass the torch, not yes. let it sit and have its own quarters.
Right. And you know what? DS9 making a little cameo in Caretaker was the exact kind of passing of the torch that we needed. It was just enough. And you know what? We did get Jonathan Frakes anyway when he was in Death Wish, and that was enough for me.
Yeah, that was enough for me too. Now think about that all the time. Seriously, think about the interaction between Janeway and Riker and the rest of the crew in Death Wish all the time. It would not have worked.
I think it would have gotten old really fast, and we wouldn't have appreciated it at all.
Yeah, like maybe some sort of weird guest spot. Even then, I don't think it would have worked. Yeah, basically, what we're saying on TTJ is that you're wrong, fans.
Oh boy, now we're going to get all the angry letters.
Now we're going to get the emails and the tweets.
Yeah, that's okay, because we do like our feedback. And you know what? We ought to bring up the fact that we got our first voicemail here on TTJ.
That's right. We get a lot
of letters, we get a lot of Twitter interaction, but we've never gotten a voicemail until a couple of weeks ago.
Let's take a listen.
Hi, folks. My name is Jeremy. I'm the host of the Star Trek Wars podcast, and I just recently listened to episode 91 of To the Journey. Now, I'm not particularly a fan of Voyager. I'm more of a Niner and TNG guy. So I'm actually one of those guys you talk about that listen to your podcast, but don't care for the show too much. But I never listened to it before, but I like the premise of this week's episode. So I thought I'd listen in. I gotta say, I thoroughly enjoyed you guys. So I'll be listening to The Journey from now on, even though I don't particularly care for Voyager. Great podcast. Thanks a lot. And I'll be tuning in. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for calling in. We loved getting that, and we'd love to get more. So please go to trek.fm/TTJ, and from there you can get our number, and you can also write us and email us. You can find us on Twitter @TheInsaneRobin and
Oh, the profanity.
And we love fan interaction. So, Char, but where else can we find you?
Well, aside from doing this podcast with you every week, you can find me very often on The Ready Room. And I've been doing a lot of Ready Rooms lately. So if you haven't listened to Trek FM's Ready Room, check that out. I've been on like the last three episodes, I think, in some capacity, either as a full-on co-host or as a part of the feature. But then I also occasionally will do Mouthy Broadcast with the lovely Jenny Zell and her gang of fabulous ladies, and we talk all sorts of crazy things. And then how about you? What are you up to?
Well, what I'm up to, and I'm really focusing on this, and I'm really having a lot of fun doing this, and this is taking a lot of my energy, and that is The Nerd Party with Matt Hansen. It's a general geek podcast. You've heard me talk about it on the show before. I'm really proud of it. I think we're doing some really great stuff. And I'm really excited about the month of October because we just got done doing an episode that was all about sequels. And next week, we're doing an episode all about the Alien movies because it's October and the first Alien is a much more of a horror film. And you have that creepy, gooey stuff. And then later on, we're doing episodes of our favorite Halloween movies and favorite horror movies. And so I really want you guys to come in and listen, because if you're a general geek like Char and I, you're really going to like this podcast. So go to thenerdparty.com. You can find all the episodes there. And like us on Facebook, on facebook.com/thenerdparty. You'll have a good time.
Most definitely. I am enjoying listening to the podcast, by the way. You guys are doing a fantastic job. Even if I don't know every single little thing about geek culture that you guys do, I still enjoy listening to you guys talk about it because it has the same kind of passion and energy that we like to put into TTJ.
I love our dynamic on TTJ. I love you and I's interaction. We've been doing it for 2 years, and I feel like, you know, we're friends, and I'm friends with Matt in real life. And I, when we started the podcast, I was like, I want this to have the same kind of energy as TTJ.
Well, you're pulling it off. And, you know, I'm friends with Matt as well. And I absolutely love what you guys are doing. You're definitely doing a bang up job.
Well, thank you so much.
Speaking of Facebook, we ought to mention the Babel Conference, which is Trek FM's replacement of the forums because those never quite took off. We have a Facebook group now called the Babel Conference. It's B-A-B-E-L. Go ahead and join that. You have to request to join because it's a closed group, but our publisher and founder, Chris, he'll let you in as soon as he can. And we have some crazy discussions going there. It's very active. A lot of people talking about all sorts of things related to Trek. And so if you haven't checked that out, go ahead and do that. I'm on there occasionally. I'm much more of a Twitter person, but I will peek in every now and again and give you a thumbs up here and there, or maybe even say something every once in a while. I don't know. I'm just not much of a Facebook fan, and I know that you're not either.
I don't even have a Facebook, but I might try to join with the Nerd Party login. So,
gotcha. Okay. Well, one more thing before we go, and that is an iTunes review. And so we got to thank C. Kruger for giving us 5 stars in the U.S. iTunes store, leaving us a glowing review. And this person is new to the world of podcasting. So welcome to the plethora of podcasts out there. We hope you continue to enjoy the ride, and thank you so much. All of this said, let's start focusing on next week. That is the next order of business. So what are we doing?
What we're doing is we're doing a retrospective and an analysis, as it were, of episodes that were directed by Star Trek alums. Now, there's a lot of them out there. You have Jonathan Frakes, you have LeVar Burton, you have Roxanne Dawson, you have Robert Duncan McNeil, you have Andrew Robinson even. And there's just so many of these people that we're directing within Voyager, and it's great to see a name that you recognize from seeing them on screen behind the camera. And we're going to look at those episodes and talk about some of our favorites, but you'll have to tune in next week to listen. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the journey!
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey! What the f*** are you doing, man?
I blanked. Let me just say it real quick. All right.
How do you blank on To the Journey?
I'm so tired.
Dude. You sure you want to do this at 11 in the morning?
At 11 in the morning is not early, but I'm just exhausted from the week. All right,
Okay, let's do that again.
I'll just say, I'll start over.